Ba, 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 ba.
Forsooth!
This episode rocked. Ba, 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 ba.
Another good one.
I was very impressed. Shut up. I was very impressed with the episode.
He's so mean.
We give our things. I'm sorry. We give our reviews in song only. Matt, now you sing.
Here we are again. Hi, everyone. Welcome again back to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. I'm your host and apparently captain, Matthew Ross, and I'm accompanied by my co-host and number one, Michael Pontone. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Number one to my captain, Matt Ross. Doing pretty well. We're recording this on a Thursday as opposed to a Sunday, which means that it's supposed to have Sunday
scaries.
Whose fault
is that, Mike?
It's my fault, but that being said, boy howdy, am I excited to not be recording and watching Star Trek while slightly depressed. Although we can always, I think that we can all agree that, let me tell you, very few cures to depression as good as Star Trek.
Yes, because
good and good for you.
It helps you overcome your fears. That's what it's there for. But that's another episode coming up. But tonight, we're seeing The Conscience of the King, written by Barry Trivers. It's a ode to Shakespeare, would you say? I think it is. It's a really good story. It's
certainly a lot of Shakespeare. And
Shakespeare and fascism. This is a story that takes place with an author who was really upset about, obviously, the Holocaust, Nazism, and eugenics, which is a term that comes up again and again in Star Trek. This is a very dark episode, and it's also known as a, it's not known as one of the better episodes, but I always have a soft spot for
it. Really?
Yeah, it's kind of dark, it's kind of twisted, the characters aren't exactly what they are sent to be. But just to do some preliminaries on it before we get there, what's interesting on this episode is that this is actually, it was filmed later, it was filmed as 13th, but it was actually shown as 12th on TV. But what's really interesting is that the people who were writing this hadn't actually seen too many of the episodes yet, so they didn't have a real feel for the characters. This is a story written in 1966 by Barry Trivers, who was actually head of the Writers Guild of America at the time. And one of the comments was, well, he sure is full of himself because he is the best writer. But he rewrote it 6 times for Roddenberry. Before we even get to the, let's get actually to what is this episode about? Mike, did you happen to get the Google blurb or anything on it? Or would you like me to read the press release from NBC, November 15th, 1966?
I didn't know I got homework on here. I'll do it next time.
All right.
Apologize, but please go ahead and read the press blotter.
Slacker! Okay, that's the way it was in 1966. The USS Enterprise provides passage for a stranded troupe of Shakespearean actors, one of whom plots the murder of Captain Kirk. In The Conscience of the King on NBC Television Network, color cast on Star Trek on December 8th. That's really kind of vague, but what it is. We start off in a very unique way. We see a play. We see Shakespeare. What do you think about that, by the way? You think Shakespeare will survive into the 23rd century?
Of course. Why wouldn't it? It survived into the 21st century from the 16th century.
That's true.
Of course it is. All this stuff is going to be, I mean, I'm always fascinated in 100 years, you know, what movies are going to be considered to be stalwart and ongoing because film is such a new medium. But like in 100 years, kids are still going to be watching Wizard of Oz and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
And maybe Star Trek.
Yeah, definitely Star Trek might, I'm going to make a prediction, right? Star Trek might have more cultural influence eventually than Star Wars. And I'll tell you why. Because they've watered down the Star Wars franchise so badly with so many bad, cheap products that it is now, it's becoming like The Simpsons, where The Simpsons now has more bad episodes than good. Star Trek still has more good than bad in terms of the weighing of the equities.
Well, we do have to get past year 5 of Discovery, if you're listening. That's coming up from our timeline. And
God.
Picard, which had one mediocre episode. You have Reference-O-Rama, known as Lower
Shut
Decks.
Up.
You have Captain Hairdo in the Ship of Harpies for Strange New Worlds. And you have the relatively good episodes of Prodigy, the kid show, which has more heart and Star Trek struggle than anything. But once you get past that crap and whatever else that is coming on out, like a Section 31 movie, which I am not looking forward to, or Starfleet Degrassi High, or the Starfleet Academy series, it's going to, you know... you just hope that the classics, as I would say, is like this, like Shakespeare in the original Klingon, as Star Trek VI is. But this is a good set of stories in here. And that's one of the big differences that these older episodes have, is that they're written by writers who had experiences, not necessarily always science fiction writers. Like tonight's episode was not written by a science fiction writer, just a writer. They do get dialogue. They do understand how people talk. It's a little bit more formal. There's no colloquialisms of the day from the 60s in this. It's written in, I guess you would say, like a higher English. And then you do have Shakespeare, and Shakespeare itself is a different form of English altogether. It's like nothing else. But as we were saying, this starts actually with a watching of a Shakespeare play. And I like that entire little bit where this person who you can't see his full face, Dr. Layton, saying, you hear that voice. And you're like, what's going on with this guy? He's not turning to the right the entire time.
I mean, it wasn't weird, though. Honestly, that was such a good reveal that I didn't believe what I saw. I was like, wait, where did that come from? Did we really not see that side of his face the entire time?
So, that's right.
The shooting of it, the staging of it, the cinematography was excellent. It took me truly by surprise. I dug the look too. It was like talking about the strength of getting back of, like, you know, doing things simply and basics, like just a big black blotch of material over his face where it's just like, that's it. Yeah. This guy got his face destroyed, his head blown off, but future technology was able to, like, keep him alive. And this is what it looks like. You know, it's not pretty, but it's also not, like, hideous.
Explains Captain Pike's chair. I mean, there may be advanced technology, but there's limits. So I do like that as well. And then they're talking about Kodos the Executioner. By the way, quick aside, Kodos is one of the characters from The Simpsons.
Kang and Kodos.
That's right. Kang is also a Star Trek reference, but that's season three. Kodos is this... person who's done some great evil. We're not really sure what it is yet, at least at the beginning. Kodos the Executioner, who is that? We have no idea. It is revealed later who it is, but just one other quick aside. This is the last of Yeoman Rand. What's really bizarre is you actually see Yeoman Rand in one of the earlier scenes of this. She walks across the bridge for about 6 seconds, and that was the last scene filmed. So that's kind of interesting TV magic. And then she was fired. So there you go. They did not want her in this episode. They didn't like her. Well, there you go. What are you going to do about this? It's also a first. This is also the first where we get to see the first of Mr. Leslie. That is the actor who, like, stands in for William Shatner on occasion. You know, you see him all the time. He's like, I think he's the most... scene actor in the show, and that's not a main star. You know, it's actually cool. We're directed by Gerd Oswald, who unfortunately gets one of the worst episodes of Star Trek Next, which is called The Alternative Factor, but more on that later. So that's who we have. We have a whole bunch of interesting situations here. We're trying to figure out what's going on. We have this. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me talk before you keep talking.
You have nothing to say.
See, I got to put my phaser to stun and give him one right between the eyes to get my word in.
It's the caffeine.
Let's see how fast I can go. It's okay. So first, I got a couple of notes here. Firstly, the whole premise is that they thought there was synthetic food. When in Star Trek lore did they create the replicator?
Thought there was no. What you're talking about, why Kodos the Executioner is a big deal type of thing? What?
No, you missed it. In the beginning, the guy with missing half his face has brought Kirk there on a pretense. He says that we've made a big breakthrough in creating synthetic food. And then he says, okay, that was actually not true. I just need you to come here to watch this Shakespeare show because I'm pretty sure this guy is an expert.
Yeah, no, well, he was saying a new way of making food, a synthetic food type of thing, because there was Earth colonies around them that were not making enough foodstuffs. So this guy was an agricultural scientist, says he made something, and so that's why Kirk is dispatched. By the way, still not the Federation, just to let you know.
Okay, when did humanity get replicators? That's
not
question.
For a long time. It's kind of implied later in later episodes of the original series, like in Trouble with the Tribbles, you'll see it, or you'll actually see it in some other episodes where they put in a food card into the wall and things appear. But there's actually a kitchens or kitchens on the Enterprise, so it's never really.
I know that. No,
it's never really clear.
Talk about turkey Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Dinner.
So it's never really clear.
Quick aside to, because not like anyone else in my life can answer any of these freaking questions, and yet they plague me. What do I look to? My parents, my siblings, my beautiful wife. They know nothing of the things that.
That's why you're having a child, so okay? You can foist it onto them.
The question I have is, Latinum and gold cannot be replicated, correct?
Apparently, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Let me just say largely about the main theme of the plot. Firstly, I was like, oh, am I watching is this a holodeck thing? The opening of the show, talking about Echoes of Future Trek, is how many shows of TNG would open. You know, they're there, they're watching a performance. It's a cold open on an unrelated performance where you're like, what are we, in space? And two, Matt, did you ever see the amazing 1970s film, which might have been a ripoff of this episode, The Marathon Man?
Yes, I have seen it, but no one's eating diamonds. So that's not what this is. But it is similar in like Nazi hunting. This one is, we're talking about Kodos the Executioner, who we later find out basically killed half the population of Tarsus IV, an Earth colony that was low on food. He did it to, save half the planet. That's what he thought anyway. But, yeah.
And, you know, our good friend Mike Stolkasa at Red Letter Media compared when they were doing the movie review of Avengers Infinity War, He said, this is like an episode of Star Trek. And he brought up this, the Conscience of the King, and brought the exact same thing, where Thanos was killing half the population to save the other half. So did Kodos. And now I watch the episode, he even has a killer assassin daughter, just like Thanos.
Yeah, she's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs in this, I'll tell you that much. Very.
Well, that's the other thing, man. Kirk went really hard for her. He was acting crazy.
Well, he wasn't going for her. He was using her. That's even commented later in the episode. But
you talked of using tools. I was a tool, wasn't I? A tool to use against my father.
In the beginning, perhaps.
Let's just go back a little bit for a second. The writer, Barry Trivers, he was trying to rewrite about the Holocaust using Tarsus IV. And he was going back 20 years in Kirk's past. The original idea was that Earth was invaded and there was some sort of fascist takeover. But the writers, Gene Roddenberry specifically, said, we don't want to kind of pigeonhole our characters into specific things. We're trying to keep it kind of open so we don't have to jump through hoops if we have to change storylines. Something a lot of newer shows don't ever do, no matter what the franchise. So that was very...
Yeah, well, speaking...
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
No, that's just one of the areas. The question, though, is the way they were writing it, was Kirk out for justice or did he have a personal vendetta? And that's consistently seen through Kirk's characters, most notably in Star Trek II, Electric Boogaloo. No, I mean The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Now, speaking of weird continuity stuff, not this, but it leads into it. I love the scene where McCoy, great, again, great shot. Right? Excellent cinematography, excellent staging. We see McCoy there having a drink. You think he's going to be speaking to Kirk. Pulls out, he's having a one-on-one with Spock?
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
That's actually one of the more interesting scenes, because he's saying, like, this is my first time in a week since I've had a sip of the true.
You know, this is the first time in a week that I've had time for a drop of the true. Would you care for a drink, Mr. Spock?
My father's race was spared the dubious benefits of alcohol.
Oh, now I know why they were conquered.
That's why you can kind of, and he goes to, you know, you want some? And Spock says, nah, we don't like that stuff. We skip that. And then McCoy makes a weird reference or statement. He says, yeah, nobody.
Right, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, what, Vulcan was conquered so easily? That's kind of quickly forgotten the entire time afterwards.
The only, right, I was going to ask that, but I have my own headcanon explanation too. So my first question is, was Vulcan ever conquered in the lore in the expanded universe?
No, it was not. I guess they conquered themselves. They were at war with each other, but stuff that I know, that it was never conquered. Some of you fans of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies, please tell us, or tell me if I'm wrong. You can email us and let us know, but we'll come to that later. I don't think they've ever been conquered. They just had a violent expansionist period, even by human standards.
A couple of things. So, firstly, my headcanon explanation, that is a reference to First Contact, that we've culturally conquered you, because even though you were ahead of us, the Federation is run by humans, but... whatever. But, that could just be a little one-off.
Well, there's a reason why the Federation seems to be run by humans, but that's for much later. Involves the Earth-Romulan War, but that's never actually been truly finished. But if you want to read something that's kind of right past the Earth-Romulan War, I strongly recommend getting Starfleet Year One. It's a great book. And it's like right at the end of that. And if you read that, it makes Discovery seem even worse than it actually is. So, if that's even possible. But anyway, the reason why...
Wait, I've got other questions.
Yes.
One last question. I'm sorry.
Don't keep asking away.
So, Romulans are on Romulus until it done exploded. And Vulcans are on Vulcan until it exploded. Well, imploded.
And humans are on Humana. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. No. But, and there are proto-Vulcans on that planet where they worship Picard.
Yeah.
Where did they all come from? Like, where was the original Vulcan Romulan race from?
Were they from Vulcan? Yeah, they were from Vulcan.
Vulcan is the original.
You're jumping an episode ahead, Mike. That's for next episode. So hush, child. Now we got to go back to this one where we're dealing with genocidal maniacs. And hiding. He ran to Argentina. No, I'm sorry. He became a space actor going around acting and hiding this person who claims his name is Anton Caridian. And they have no record of who it is. But Kirk is really doing hard research on this. He uses the computer. He actually does a side-by-side comparison of who they look like. Seems pretty obvious from the pictures that they had there. And the computer is trying to find information for him, which actually gives Kirk an idea. Later, they get invited down to dinner. Dr. Layton's house, because he invited over the entire Caridian players, because he wants Kirk to see if Kodos, Anton Caridian, is Kodos. And that's where we meet his lovely daughter, Lenore. What did you think of our...
My goodness.
She's very pretty. Just as a something...
You should... Absolutely.
You should know is that the actress commented that she wasn't actually wearing costumes because they didn't have a big budget. They pretty much just taped something on her and she couldn't move too much because she was afraid to fall off.
We all commented watching the show that she was just wearing like a mink rug.
Yes.
She looked fantastic. And as I was saying, you know, it's interesting things, how people's faces change over time. 60 years have gone by, and that would be an attractive woman today in 2024.
She was 19. So, yeah, she was 19.
Gorgeous.
She was 19.
What?
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. She was 19, and one of the things that she commented on is that in several of the scenes, she had like a breakout on her face, so they kept angling the cameras, and you'd never know it, even with HD. You have to look really hard. She had like a breakout on her upper lip. So I just thought that's pretty funny how the way they did that. They said, oh, they did magic with it. That's Barbara Anderson. She was later in other TV shows like Ironsides, where she won an Emmy, actually. So she had various things on TV. She was just saying about how her face was really like breaking out, and they kept angling the camera and used various lights and so forth to hide her blemishes. Pretty good, I thought. You'd like the camera work on her?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, they made her look great. She has great hair.
Yeah, she sure
like,
does.
Like, ridiculous. And I'm not... Immediately, I suspected that she was the killer. Because, of course, I mean, it would be a little too obvious if it was... if it was the guy. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she plays it in a way where you're having your doubts.
That is true. By the way, the guy we're talking about, the actor Arnold Moss, who did a lot of Shakespeare work and actually acted on TV. He played in various roles of Shakespearean characters. He does that very well as the Great Caridian.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Isn't he? What I like is after this party, you know, you're wondering, gee, where's Dr. Layton? You know he's already dead. But the way she kind of just throws off suspicion, she actually does arrive right there. So, but you don't really think that she's a killer at that point. Did you think she was the killer right at the beginning?
Well, again, it was a weird thing. And the writing was actually pretty good because it was straddling the line of like, oh, well, it must be her, but it can't be her because it's too obvious. And it must be him, but it can't be him because it's too obvious. And then they're both acting very convincing and charismatically. To the point where, at the end, when she reveals, it wasn't a huge surprise. I mean, especially after, we're jumping ahead, when Kirk has, like, you know, the heart-to-heart with the guy.
Right.
And he basically admits what he did. I'm like, okay, no way is this guy who's... basically charismatically saying why he did it and that he thought that it and he didn't want to do it and that he wish he hadn't. No way is this guy going around and like spraying poison in people's milk. By the way, who was that guy?
What?
He looked very familiar.
Oh, that's Lieutenant Riley. That's played by Bruce Hyde.
Yes.
Bruce Hyde actually hated his acting in this. He thought he was a whiny character. He hated the milk drinking scene at the when he gets demoted to engineering or put down, which is like, why is he demoted? It's not really a demotion. He was on the bridge in the Naked Time with Sulu, working up a sweat, and then speaking in Irish and singing Take Me Home, Kathleen, back at the same console.
Okay, that was him.
Right.
Gotcha.
But you know what's, if you look at it and you watch it again, you realize that Kirk's not just trying to get some action. He's actually using... Lenore, the daughter, to try and get information. That's what I found fascinating on Kirk's part. Today's fans think, oh, well, Kirk was just trying to get some action. But if you look carefully, he isn't really. He's being very vague of what's going on. He's trying to find out all about them and their father and keep her engaged to see if he could get more information. And that's also where he comes up with the idea to strand them on the planet. He actually finds out that they're going to the Benicia colony on the Astral Queen, a solid ship. And Kirk uses that as a pretext to strand them. He calls up the captain of the Astral Queen and says, strand them here. We'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. That also brings the attention of Mr. Spock to the captain's behavior. And that also precedes the drinking scene with McCoy. That's all a ruse to try and get it. In fact, Lenore calls him out on it in the end, saying, you were using me as well, is what she actually says. That was pretty intense, I thought. It was actually well done. You would think that he's trying to get sex, but he's not. He's actually trying to find justice. If you do math, Kirk is approximately 13 while he was on Tarsus 4. So that's kind of why was he on Tarsus 4? Who knows? But he was 13 and he saw this guy murder 4,000 people in front of him. Kind of disturbing.
By the way, speaking of looking young, there were a couple of shots in here. I don't know what the thing is, what the deal was with the lighting or just the angle. He looked exactly like Chris Pine in a couple of places. In retrospect, that was pretty good casting, I gotta say.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. It's the light hair and the eyes. That's the secret. Hazel greenish eyes or brown. It's very nice. Very, very pretty. He's a very pretty person. So just in a quick note, the director, Gerd Oswald, he did 14 Outer Limits episodes. He did Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. He actually did Outer Limits with James Doohan. He also worked on the Outer Limits, Harlan Ellison's Soldier. If you haven't seen that one, I suggest you look it up. It's called Soldier. It's by Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison also has got connections to Star Trek, which we'll come to later. They thought, yeah, he'd be a great director. The director himself, he did a pretty good job, I thought, overall. What did you have any opinion on how the direction of the episode went?
Honestly, Matt, I'm telling you, this is by far, in my opinion, the best episode that I've seen.
Even better than The Menagerie's Part 1 and 2? Better?
Well, yeah, because here's the problem with The Menagerie. Because while The Menagerie was very good, it was trying to stretch out into two episodes. And, like, that, all the stuff, the conflict that Pike was having with the illusions grounded to a halt. Like, when he was having that, like, fight with that big weird barbarian,
mm-hmm.
it was just like, well, I know that this doesn't matter, and I know that he's not going to get hurt because he'll live to get doused in horrific radiation burns. But point is, this is a very tight whodunit political psycho thriller with some very good sci-fi concepts, Earth colonies, you know, showing leisure in space. Like, you know, that's the thing. Where at any point in science fiction before this did you see that space was so comfortable that they had actors around?
That's true.
You know,
it is true. You could show that in a way they are showing that the crew is actors. The crew are people. They need diversions just like anybody else. You know, they work on a ship that's dangerous, but they also need entertainment just like any service vessel. You know, that's what they're in there for. Just a note, Gerd Oswald, the director, did not like William Shatner. He said he couldn't tell him what to do. Yet, the co-star, Anderson, Lenore said Shatner was very professional and a good jokester on the set. So again, we have that dichotomy of what people think of Shatner's personality. Maybe Shatner was just joking around too much all those times and people were taking it way too seriously, just happy to have a job. Who knows? But I think that was another one of those instances where it's like, who's it going to be? Is it Shatner? Is Shatner a jerk, or is he, you know, a nice guy? Kind of hard to tell when you keep getting two different sides of the story. Again, a lot of this information comes from our Bible and Greek mythology handbook. These Are the Voyages, TOS Season 1 by Mark Cushman, and also by Susan Osborne. So it's a weird dichotomy of what people's opinions of Bill Shatner in this. But again, he's actually, I think, excellent in this. You see him like obsessing, planning to try and trap this guy. And then you see Spock's concern. Even Spock, as executive officer, tells his captain, you know, you're acting a little bit crazy, sir. I have to make sure that the ship runs well. That's my job. You command it, I run it. It's kind of what he's saying. I thought that was a neat confrontation between Kirk and Spock. Did you have any opinion into that?
Well, I mean, not particularly. What was your
My rambling question? Question was, did you pick up on the conflict between Kirk and Spock?
It was the entire time. It was the entire episode.
I like that.
Spock thinks that he's gone gal crazy.
Yeah, he sure has. And, you know, I like the speaking of actors, you were asking about Riley. So that's the guy down there. That's Bruce Hyde. He actually quit acting soon thereafter, become a teacher. Not a public school teacher, but a teacher in acting. Became a professor in various universities. But
does he still come around to any of the conventions? Oh, I guess he's dead now, right?
Yes, that's true. But one of the other interesting acting things with Reilly is they got to have Nichelle Nichols sing. She was actually requested to sing, so they wrote her a tune about the Beyond the Stars of Antares. Did you like that song?
I did not like the song.
Did you like her voice?
I think that she was not given... She sung before, and it was much better.
No, that was when she was singing to Charlie, because Charlie is our darling. Yes.
Yes.
But this one, I actually like this song. I think her voice is very nice. It's a very lonely song. I don't see how that would cheer me up as Reilly, who gets poisoned in his milk. I don't know. That part, I can't stand that he's drinking milk.
Yeah, he really contemplates that milk.
Oh, that milk is amazing.
He's staring at it.
Needs to be blue. No, that would be Star Wars.
Well, I mean, he's just like, he's doing charismatic eating of the milk. He's like, wow, where'd this come from? What cow was milked in space?
That's the best milk I've ever had in my life. It's the best thing.
Oh, he went full old man, old Jewish man, you're saying. Gotcha.
Thank you. Thank you, darling. I also, did you enjoy the explanation of the day-night cycle on the Enterprise? Or did you pick up on that?
I didn't. You know, remind me.
So when Kirk is seemingly flirting with Lenore, he shows her the shuttle deck by they're walking on like a walkway. And she goes, did you dim the lights just for me? And he goes, well, no, we're on a 24-hour cycle, so we simulate Earth. So that explains why the lighting is the way it is.
When did they first use the soul system term?
You mean in humanity? They used it originally, though, in I think it's in the first episode that we ever see. They're talking about soul system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they, but that's, you know, what's the name of our son is Saul. Saul. S-A-U-L. Saul, darling, can you heat me up and pass me the rugula? That's not.
Oh, my God. You see, look, he's practicing for his borscht belt stand.
Let me tell you something, darling. Yeah. But that's this episode, as we're going through, we hear about the horror of Tarsis IV. Again, the planet was running out of food, and through a military coup, this strong man, a dictator named Kodos, takes over, and he has that creepy speech about how we have to kill you in order for us to survive. He decides who lives and who dies.
The revolution is successful. But survival depends on drastic measures. Your continued existence represents a threat to the well-being of society. Your lives mean slow death to the more valued members of the colony. Therefore, I have no alternative but to sentence you to death. Your executioner so ordered, signed Kodos, governor of Tarsis IV.
Something like a Captain Pike thing would say. Very creepy, eugenicist's idea. Who is the one who gets to survive? Who lives and who dies? What would you do if you were governor of Tarsis IV? You only have food for half the people. What do you do? Wait for half Starfleet to appear? I don't know. What do you think?
No, I mean, I would definitely not just get rid of half the people indiscriminately. I'd probably just say, okay, you know, kids, young folk, go first. And first it would be like, listen, everyone, we're not going to make it. Let's start with the people who want to volunteer to give up their rations so the younger people can survive. And, you know, we'll go from there. It's not going to be great. And it's going to be a weird one here, okay? I'm just saying, because I don't know if I've ever gone on this rant to you. I'm actually a secret fan of the tragedies that took place in the mid-19th century of bands of explorers and settlers getting frozen and having to resort to cannibalism. It was happening at the same time on different sides of the globe in the same winter in the Donner Party in obviously the Sierra Nevadas and the Franklin Expedition up by the North Pole, but in the North Sea, by Nunavut. And it was, the point is that you do realize that there's this term, deanthropomorphization, when basically when someone dies, they stop being like a person. Something will switch in your brain eventually, because a dead body is as much in common with a person as a table does. It's just an object. So the point is that why didn't he just kill a quarter of the population and feed them to the rest?
Well, you know, that's something Baron Karza did in the comic book The Micronauts. But then you might also like the David Gran book called The Wager. That's about a shipwreck and trying to survive off of and cannibalism.
Oh, I've heard of
that. Yes, it's sitting right next to me. Then also you probably also like the movie Alive, which is that's based on real life as well.
I love that story of
Alive. Very disturbing.
They were, very disturbing, but also quite the story of hope.
Mm.
And the good thing there is that enough people died in the initial plane crash that they did not have to murder anyone.
Well, that is true.
There was, yeah.
But then you also have that TV show Yellow Jackets, which is currently on, I think, on Showtime.
I've not checked it out, although I am obviously a Christina Ricci fan, like any good 90s
movie. But I think that's in there as well. But that's more of an occult kind of weirdness. There's a lot of these stories. And if you recall in law school when we learned about Law of the Sea, I don't know if you had that class where you learn about Regina versus, and I forget what it is, that's the crown of England, when they, some crew, like, murdered someone for food as opposed to waiting for him to die, and that was the distinction. Of course, if they waited for the weaker person to die, yes, they would have all died. Then they ate his liver with a nice Chianti and fava beans. You know, something like that.
Yes. Oh, wow. Look. Wanting to make a Seven reference, referencing what's in the box.
What's in the box?
Don't put in that stupid sound.
Was terrible. I know, it's a terrible. But anyway, so, what I find it a weird kind of psychosis that this Kyridian, once Kirk confronts him and makes him read the murdering phrases, they have this debate.
Yeah.
He goes, Kirk says, I doubt history will, or history's already made its judgment, and Kyridian goes, well, if the ships hadn't arrived, maybe Kodos would have seen as a great hero. Do you think Kodos would have seen as a great hero by massacring half the population? I think he's deluded himself into thinking that. There's no way anyone would say, yeah, killing half the population was the way to go. It just seemed like an act of violence to maintain power and then to survive, to keep himself in a selfish way, to stay in, to be top dog on that planet. Did you have any thoughts on that speech between Kirk and Kodos, or excuse me, Kyridian?
I thought it was sweet. I thought it was very well done. I liked the, obviously, A-plus actors. The actor there was taking it very seriously. Last time I saw an actor that good on Star Trek, TOS was in the first story with future Frank Poole.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like, committing to the role. So who was that guy? Was he in many things?
Right, you mean,
was he a stage actor?
Yes, he was a stage actor. He did a lot of Shakespeare work. Again, his name is Arnold Moss. He did many Shakespeare roles, King Lear, Hamlet, Macbeth, you name it. And he was on TV, actually, not too earlier than this episode. So the public had already seen him doing Shakespeare on there. One thing, again, I want to mention is that there had been, at the time that this had finally started to film, not one episode had been aired on TV. The writing, the acting, people were just guessing how to portray themselves on the screen. So that's kind of weird. It seems like they've been doing it for a long time and they know their roles. But they're basically, all the actors are still filling out everything. They don't really get the tech. They don't really understand where it is. They're 12 episodes in, or 11, if you will. Not one episode has yet to air. The Man Trap airs as they're filming this episode. So it's kind of weird that they have nothing.
I mean, Man Trap is a pretty good
episode. They have nothing to reference because no one's seen it. That's the weird part. So the actors can't say, like, oh, yeah, maybe Kirk should have done this, or Caridian would go, or Arnold Moss would go, okay, yeah, so this is a space Shakespearean. Let me see how you've done. It was very theater, which is a big thing in all of this episodes or television. It's all very like a small stage production. It shows. It's kind of like they're acting their way through. They have nothing to rely on, which I guess makes it better. So there you go. By the way, this is Ronald Moore's favorite episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, you know, I get that sense because I love Ronald Moore's Star Trek. It's peak Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right now it's Ronald Moore and Terry Metalis and then the rest of them.
And the rest. But
so fantastic. That makes so much sense, honestly. And by the way, don't we like this is also talking about Echoes of Future Trek. There was more than one DS9 episode where Kira was trying to track down and kill some Cardassian warlord who comes to the station, or some Bajoran collaborator.
Yes,
who had helped the Cardassians.
That's true, but and you can actually put all that stuff, any of these shows, into anything. You can make any political group in DS9. This one is. Especially for the time it is, it clearly falls in the camp of Nazi hunting. We're going to avoid going to modern day politicizing on what each episode could be. But this one is very clearly the episodes of hunting down Nazis. And
not only that, I really, on top of that, it was not blatant. Like, they did not make him some mustache twirling villain like a Nazi.
No.
They made him oddly sympathetic.
They did. It's like, why are you you coming after this guy? I mean, he was desperate, but where he's not sympathetic is he did just arbitrarily kill 4,000 people out of 8. He also took over the government. So it was stated as a coup. So in a sense, he is literally the stand-in for Hitler. That's who he's supposed to be. It's actually kind of disturbing. Well,
then you might have some Hitler sympathizers on the writing staff there.
No, it's not. No. This is Barry Triver's attempt to show the world using allegory, something sadly mistaken in modern science fiction and Star Trek specifically. Allegory to show, like, this is kind of just like what we just lived through and why everything about it is bad. Why eugenics are bad. They mentioned that Kodos had his own ideas of humanity and superiority and who should survive, you know, like the fascist ideal of the Nazis. And we hear that term eugenics when it comes to Khan, Noonien, and Singh, but that's later.
And they listen, following the Nazis, they also have that they got a bad offender who's also this blonde lady, because the SS women were supposedly more cruel. Anyway, listen, let's wrap this up. We're at over 40 minutes.
Oh, sorry.
Rating.
Well, wait, actually, before that, I just want to say, because I started reading this quote before, Grace Lee Whitney said that she vividly remembered how horrible and humiliated I felt going on to the set, and that was my final scene, the six-second walk-on, knowing that my Star Trek career was over already. So she was pissed that she was cut out of this. She was actually supposed to meet Kirk and Lenore on that deck and hand him a report. I like this episode, though. If I'm going to give it a rating, I'm going to give it, me personally, I'm going to give this actually an 8 out of 10, almost a 9. That's what I would give it to you. What about you, sir?
I'm giving it a strong 9. I was about to say a 10, but I'm like, I've not seen, they're all going to be relative. So I don't feel like I've not seen enough to go to an extreme yet.
So you're giving it a 9 then?
I'm going to give it a solid 9. I'll tell you something better. I'm going to do a 9 compared to all the Trek I know.
Wow.
So this is right now right up there in my top Trek episodes, like In the Pale Moonlight, by Inferno's Light. Yeah, by Purgatory Shadow, by Inferno's Light, great two-parter in DS9. Cause and Effect, my favorite bottle episode of TNG. Time's Arrow, 1 and 2. Picard, all season 3, my favorites. And, of course, The Thaw, Voyager. Wow. Anyway, yes.
Wow, you really, need, this you is right really like Time's Arrow that much, huh? Well, we're going to have to get to that eventually. But Also, I do want to point out, we do have an ending for this. We did jump over that for a second because Lenore jumps the rails here and she accidentally kills her father while Riley, who hears McCoy talking about who Caridian is, but she loses her mind. I think they used a neural neuralizer on her because she's going to even remember that her dad was still alive and performing somewhere. As McCoy points it out today, oh, she thinks her dad's okay. Well, what technology did they use to that? I thought they got rid of that device in Dagger of the Mind.
You will forget all you have heard, to remember any portion of it, any word, will cause you pain, terrible pain, growing more terrible as you fight to remember.
I guess she did forget, or maybe the writers did, or maybe they didn't see that episode yet. Still, I'm still giving it 8. It's still over. Enjoy. Do you have a WTF moment for this episode for you?
Yeah, the milk.
The milk.
Everything with that scene was weird. The singing, the contemplating, the squirt spray bottle of poison.
Those spray bottles were new in the 60s, so you have to show them off as much as possible. Now you can buy them, a couple of bucks at a time. I actually think that I agree with you. The milk. What is it with milk? It's all wholesome and pure. And this is the last time we see Riley. So the life of Riley is over. The life of Rand is over. And that's it. I think it's an overall good episode. I think since you think this is so great, I question what you will think of the next episode, which is routinely held as one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever. It's called Balance of Terror, where we meet.
Okay, well, I like to go into these as fresh as possible. I didn't know that this was considered to be a good episode. I was blown away.
Well, no, that's great. Well, we'll see what you think of next time. Balance of Terror is next time. That's our opinions on this one. Mike gave it a 9. I gave it an 8. It's fun overall, and we hope you enjoyed it. Anything else you want to tell our valiant listeners out there, Mike, besides, don't kill half the population?
Thank you for listening. Live long and prosper as always. And thank you, as always, to my captain, the leader of the ship, as I'm just pressing buttons in the background. Thank you.
Hey, anytime, Mike. And anyone who wanted to reach out to us, remember to you can like, share, and subscribe. And don't forget, if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them in YouTube or email us at yellingatgas@gmail.com. And as always, live long and prosper. Night, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode. Night, Mike.
Good night, Duke.